providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed the first couple segments there with Rick Bensignor. I am following up those segments with a replay from an interview that I had with Peter Buchvar that I posted earlier in the week. Peter's such a source, a valuable source of information that I wanted to get his interview out immediately for all of our daily listeners, but I also did want to replay it here. I hope you all enjoy what Peter has to say. Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. This daily editorial will also be featured on the weekend show because I am chatting with Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Advisory Group, also writes the Book Report website, which I will post a link to, where that's where Peter shares his rundown of economic data, news headlines that move markets, and broad market moves. He shares those thoughts multiple times a day. I check that website out pretty much every day. Peter, let's start off with this overwhelming theory and concept that we are going to continue to get fiscal stimulus, and we're also going to get some sort of a stimulus package from the U.S. government. Now, this stimulus package has been very slow. We still haven't got it, but I think that also just works with the timing of the election and all the fighting that we are seeing between the Republicans and the Democrats. I don't care about necessary timing, but I want to get your thoughts on the market. Is it right to price in this fiscal stimulus?
Well, I like to refer to it more as fiscal spending because it's not really stimulating anything. It's more filling holes and buying time to a vaccine and an economy that can get its legs back. I think in the short term, when you spend a few trillion dollars, you can sort of generate a level of activity that wouldn't have happened otherwise. But the problem with fiscal spending is it eventually runs out, and then you're sort of back to where you were. And we saw that with almost $3 trillion that was already spent. So you lop on another $2 trillion. It's really just more of a steroid shot. But again, part of that is on purpose in the sense that it's trying to buy time. And I think that is what the market is hoping for. It seems like it's almost a very binary type attitude and believing that regardless of who is going to be elected the next president, and regardless of who's controlling Congress, and regardless of the timing of it, that another few trillion dollars will be spent. Now, I think it's a mistake to think that if Biden wins, that a lot of fiscal spending is going to offset proposed tax increases. But that's the mentality that the market is taking, and I think that's why it's at 3,500 or instead of a level below that.
Now, what about the whole theory or question of where this money will land when we balance it out with a lot of the spending, a lot of the programs in the past seem to truly support U.S. markets? We are hearing more and more about maybe some sort of infrastructure spend. A few different ideas are being thrown around right now. Do you think that we're going to see a different outcome than the last few times when we have seen money be printed where it really just lands in the markets?
No, there probably won't be any difference. Lower income people will get their checks, and there'll be added unemployment benefits, and there'll be money to the states, and money to help the airline industry, and possibly the leisure and hospitality industry, which obviously be a help to them. But again, that's more filling holes, but at least keeping those companies alive. I know there's this obsession with infrastructure spending, but remember that once that road is repaved, you're sort of back to square one again, where money in the private sector is something that is more sustainable if it leads to more permanent behavior, which typically is the case. I wish, you know, if infrastructure spending was the key, then Japan would have had an amazing 30 years. But it also depends on the productivity of that infrastructure spending. I mean, obviously, a bridge that needs to be repaired or redone needs to be redone, but it makes it sound like we don't have infrastructure spending in the U.S. Every state, if you add it up in the aggregate, spends a tremendous amount of money on infrastructure, I mean, who hasn't been on a highway over the recently where there hasn't been construction of some sort? And it's always the case. There's always infrastructure spending going on in some fashion.
Yeah, that's a very good point, too. But Peter, when it comes to market moves on the back of expectations of consumer spending, we've seen a lot of the recent data show that markets, the confidence level is still quite high from investors. And considering how much volatility and uncertainty there is, I consider it almost extreme levels of how confident investors are right now. How important is it for the markets and even for the government and central banks to keep investor confidence relatively elevated?
Well, I think that we've seen over the last 20 plus years, going back to Greenspan, how Fed policy was meant to engender confidence, and the Fed put and so on. And that's certainly the case now, that the market believes that somehow zero rates and QE is some sort of backstop. And now you have the possibility of fiscal spending joining that monetary policy in creating that backstop. But I think we also have to remind people that that could work for a period of time, but the last two bear markets in stocks, and I'm not saying that we're going into a bear market, but the last two bear markets in stocks were met with massive Fed easing that did not stop those bear markets. So it works until it doesn't. And yeah, right now there is confidence in the ability of central bankers and politicians to print and spend a lot of money. But at some point, you're going to need some fundamental results from that, and we'll have to see. I continue to believe that the end result of this will be inflation and higher long-term interest rates. So whatever short-term benefit we get now is going to be offset by that over the next 12 to 24 months.
You think it could happen that quickly, hey? Because inflation was the next road that I wanted to go down in this interview. You think inflation's moving higher and could be moving higher in the near term?
I think we're already seeing that. We're already seeing that in PPI and CPI. The headline CPI index, as well as the core CPI index, the index itself, not the rate of change, but the index itself, is above where it was pre-COVID. So for all the talk about a deflationary bust and disinflation, this and that, the inflation index has never been higher, both on a headline level and a core level. So we've just gone through a pandemic, and the inflation statistics have never been this high. And we're seeing inflation on the good side in particular that has picked up. That was a missing piece of the inflation puzzle looking at over the past 10 years. So I think the early signs of it are already here. We're also seeing it in inflation expectations within the U.S. TIPS market. We've seen it in expectations within consumer confidence surveys. We're seeing it in the price of gold. We're seeing it in the price of food right now, price of industrial metals, and certainly the price of transportation. If you need to ship something by sea, air, or truck, you're paying double-digit rate increases versus last year. And every single thing in this world that is produced ends up on a truck, a ship, or a railroad, or a car, an airplane at some point in time.
So is this going to carry over to what Jerome Powell's been saying? The Fed wants inflation over that 2% target to even out or average out all that time it was under 2%. Is he going to finally start accepting that inflation is running?
As dangerous as their desire is, if fulfilled, they will unfortunately get what they wish, what they are wishing for. And they will regret having it once they see it.
Oh, yeah, I think they will as well. But boy, oh boy, they have been in front of everybody, Jerome Powell especially, saying that they want higher inflation and they're going to use whatever tools and maybe some new tools to get there, except for the fact that they're also not predicting inflation to reach some of these levels in some of their forward forecasts. Let's move over to the actual markets now, because we've seen a little bit of a rest in these high-flying tech stocks that really kept on pushing the markets higher. We've seen a bit better breadth. We've seen some of the lagging sectors, just a general rotation of money. How sustainable is this trend in your eyes?
I think the sustainability will be dependent on whether we continue to have slow growth low inflation, low interest rates, or we get a pickup in growth, pickup in inflation, and a pickup in interest rates. Now, we won't really know until 2021, but I think one of the key variables in answering that question is whether we have a vaccine or not that is going to get rolled out in the beginning of next year. I think that if that is the case in March, April, May of next year, people start getting it and starts to give people more confidence and for companies to invest, for households to go out for dinner and feel safer and so on and go to a movie theater or a sporting event or eventually a concert, that's going to lead to a pickup in growth. That's going to lead to higher interest rates. That's going to lead to higher inflation. That's going to lead to lower PE ratios for the big growth stocks. And it will benefit those stocks that have been most beaten up, like leisure and hospitality, transportation, particularly airlines. It would help the bank stocks because they would get a steepening yield curve. It would help the energy stocks or other commodity stocks. And those are the value parts of the market. So I think that would be, as I say, I think the vaccine could very well single-handedly be a key contributor to whether this is sustainable or not.
But can investors bet on a vaccine right now? It's still seeming to be a pretty muddy picture in terms of if any vaccine is going to work.
Well, we're going to get some news hopefully in the next couple of weeks or early November from Pfizer on their phase 3 trials. And then probably by the end of the November, they're going to release the safety aspect of that. And that will be the first hint of whether we're close or we're not close. We know that we're beginning to get some effective therapeutics, which I think is a big deal, and in terms of sort of biding time until we get that vaccine, that if people are confident that even if they do sick, that then there's plenty of medicines to take to quickly get over it. I mean, this is going to be a process. It's going to be a long process, but a lot of it's about confidence, and I think the direction of the medicine in terms of its results will be a key contributor to that confidence level and this economic growth.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Let's also talk about yields, because you mentioned that you'd see an environment where yields could be higher. In all fairness, you look at something like the 10-year, and that has been trending higher slowly, but it is still trending higher over the past about month and a half now. Is this going to be a continued trend of yields just creeping higher?
Well, I think that the day we walk in and Pfizer does have good news in the vaccine, it won't be a creep. It'll be a spike, and that you'll see a 10-year yield of 1.25 rather quickly if Pfizer has something good to say.
Does that mean that other safety plays, such as, say, gold, would that get hit hard if there is some developments or an actual announcement of a vaccine?
Maybe initially, but when people realize the inflationary implications of this, and it means that the Fed is going to way overstay their welcome, and still keep rates on the short end pinned at zero. So, yeah, you may get a rise in long rates, but because of the inflation that I anticipate being moving higher faster than rates, I do expect further deeper negative real rates. And also the dollar could weaken as people become, the dollar is in this sort of safety trade. If there's less need for that safety, the dollar could weaken in addition to seeing further negative real rates. Now it actually benefit gold and silver after any initial reactions.
Okay, that was going to be the final market that we talked about here, the U.S. dollar, which really broke down over the last about 6 to 7 months, had a short little rebound. You still see some weakness in the dollar ahead of us, though, hey?
I do. I think that the bull case in the dollar is, well, everything else is terrible in comparison, and there's this dollar shortage. And I argue that, at least from a trade deficit, a current account deficit, a budget deficit standpoint, all these different deficits the U.S. is facing is actually more dollar net compared to other countries, is the most dollar negative. And just the budget deficit, which is now 15% of GDP, now that'll shrink next year, assuming the economy rebounds, but it's still an extraordinary level. And if you can chart over the last 30 years, the U.S. budget deficit as a percent of GDP versus the U.S. dollar, and it's a pretty good corollary. And we've seen the plunge in the budget deficit relative to GDP, or I should say spike, in terms of deficit. And I do expect over the next year or two, the dollar to follow.
All right, Peter, we're going to wrap it up there. It's always interesting hearing what you have to say about the markets and this conversation, looking a bit past some of the short-term news and volatility that we continue to get from the election. But still, we need to note what's going on with COVID, what's going on with any sort of vaccine, and how these markets are trading, because boy, oh boy, in these volatile times, people can sure get distracted by a lot of other aspects that really won't have longer impacts on overall trends. Again, Peter does write the Book Report website, www.bookreport.com. I will post a link below. Peter, it's great having you on the show. Thanks again for taking time, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, Corey. Always fun. You too.